Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to New Mexico West Prepping on the Contra Radio Network. Preparing today to survive the day after. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm your co-host, Eric.
All right, on this show, we're going to discuss ways to prep for various possible SHTF scenarios, such as tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, grid down, EMP, solar flares, and more. We will discuss what you need, prepping in your daily routine, and what you can do to help increase your likelihood of survival in the SHTF scenario. Preparing today to survive the day after. Prepping for possible events like these will greatly increase the likelihood of you and your family's survival. All right, and I have Eric with me here. Are you there, Eric?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you good. All right, so today we're going to discuss couple of possible scenarios, things that we have prepped for in our prepping, and things that if you prep for in the long run, you'll be much better off, so that the likelihood of actually making through a scenario of greater extent of damage is much more likely, and it makes it a lot easier on you. So, Eric, if you want to get started with hurricanes?
It's earthquakes, but okay. So today I will be talking about earthquakes, hurricanes, and tornadoes. A majority of the information that I have gotten is from ready.gov. And here we go. So, before an earthquake, let's see, you want to start, like, a plan. Like, so if an earthquake does happen, you know exactly what to do. And in that plan, you're going to want to identify safe places that you can go to, such as a sturdy or under a sturdy piece of furniture or against an interior wall in your home, office, or school, so that when the shaking starts, that you can drop on the ground, cover your head and neck with your arms, and if a safer place is nearby, crawl to it and hold on. Before an earthquake occurs, secure items that could fall and cause injuries, example, bookshelves, mirrors, and light fixtures, you may want to stay away from them, and store critical supplies such as water and medication and food, and also important documents.
Yeah, and we keep our documents on a thumb drive. That way, if we ever need them, we have them easily accessible in case something were to happen to the originals before we can get them replaced. Having copies of all your birth certificates, social security cards, driver's licenses, all that information, and put it on. They have thumb drives that are actually secured, encrypted, so that if you lose it and somebody were to find it, they don't have all your information, so you always want to keep security in mind, as far as that goes. All right, go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
Okay, so during an earthquake, if you're inside a building, stay where you are until the shaking stops. Do not run outside. Do not get in a doorway, as this does not provide protection from falling or flying objects, and you may not be able to remain standing. drop down on your hands and knees so the earthquake doesn't knock you down. drop to the ground before the earthquake drops you. And then you want to cover your head, neck, with your arms to protect yourself from falling debris.
Which you can also do with, like, a mattress, right?
Yep.
Just kind of pull a mattress off on top of you. Remember, we went over that when we used to live in Tornado Alley.
Yep.
The same
thing. I remember that.
I want to say welcome, guest 2068. You go ahead, Eric.
If you're in danger from falling objects, you can move safely, crawl for additional cover, such as my dad just said, like a bed. If there is low furniture or an interior wall or corner nearby and the path is clear, these may also provide some additional cover. Stay away from glass, windows, outside doors, and walls, and anything that could fall, such as light fixtures or furniture. If getting safely to the floor to take cover won't be possible, identify an inside corner of the room away from windows and objects that could fall on you. The Earthquake Country Alliance advises getting as low as possible to the floor. People who use wheelchairs or other mobility devices could lock their wheels and remain seated until the shaking stops. If you're in bed when you feel the shaking, stay there and cover your head and neck with a pillow. At night, hazards and debris are difficult to see and avoid. Attempts to move in the dark result in more injuries than remaining in bed. If you're outside when you feel the shaking, move away from buildings, streetlights, and utility wires. Once in the open, drop, cover, and hold on. Stay there until the shaking stops. This might not be possible in a city, so you may need to duck inside a building to avoid falling debris. If you're in a moving vehicle while you feel the shaking, stop as quickly and safely as possible and stay inside the vehicle. Avoid stopping near or under buildings, trees, overpasses, and utility wires. Proceed cautiously once the earthquake has stopped, and avoid roads, bridges, and ramps that the earthquake may have damaged. After an earthquake, when the shaking stops, look around. If there is a clear path to safety, leave the building and go to an open space away from damaged areas. If you are trapped, do not move about or kick up dust. If you have a cell phone with you, use it to call or text for help. And tap on pipe or wall, or use a whistle if you have one, so that rescuers can locate you. Once safe, monitor local news reports.
Eric,
via
something else real quick about the cell phones is that if you're in a entrapped situation, a lot of times in earthquakes and things like that, your cell phone service won't be busy, so you won't actually be able to get a call through if all circuits are busy. But if you send a text, the text will go through. So if you're trapped someplace and you have access to your cell phone, send a text to somebody that you know will get it, and let them know where you're at, you know, what your situation is, so they can get in touch with rescue personnel and let them know where you're at, so that they can try and get out there and get you help. Welcome, Eric.
What?
All right, so go ahead. I was just welcoming guest 2111.
Okay. Once you are safe from the earthquake, monitor local news reports via a battery-operated radio if you have one. And if your TV is still in one piece, you can use it to look at the news. You you'd have to have or be able to have service, you'd have to check social media and cell phone texts for alerts of emergency information and instructions. And always be prepared to drop cover and hold on in the likely event of aftershocks.
All right, very good. So, basically, it's just a brief going over of earthquakes. Earthquakes, where we're at, aren't as big of an issue. So, per se, we haven't prepped 100% for things like earthquakes. Something else you can do if you're in an earthquake is clap your hands. When, you know, a lot of times they'll hear that noise when they're searching for you. Clap your hands, beat on things, whistle, high pitched sounds and things like that. All right, going on to hurricanes next, bud.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
So, before an earthquake happens, you want to prepare your home. Hurricane winds can cause trees and branches to fall. So before hurricane season, trim or remove damaged trees and limbs to keep you and your property safe. Secure loose rain gutters and downspouts and clear any clogged areas or debris to prevent water damage to your property. Reduce property damage by retrofitting to secure and reinforce the roof, windows, and doors, including the garage doors. Purchase a portable generator or install a generator for use during power outages. Remember to keep generators and other alternate power or heat sources outside, at least 20 feet away from windows and doors and protected from moisture. And never try to power the house wiring by plugging a generator into a wall outlet. Consider building a FEMA safe room or an ICC 500 storm shelter designed for protection from high winds and in locations above flooding levels. When a hurricane is 6 hours from arriving, if you're not in an area that is recommended for evacuation, plan to stay at home where you are and let friends and family know where you are. Close storm shutters and stay away from windows. Flying glass from broken windows could injure you. Turn your refrigerator or freezer to the coldest setting and open only when necessary. If you lose power, food will last longer. Keep a thermometer in the refrigerator to be able to check the food temperature when the power is restored. Turn on your TV or radio, or check with your city or county website every 30 minutes in order to get latest weather updates and emergency instructions.
Yep. Also on that on the refrigerators, they have the solar generators. Order without the solar panels, so it's just like a battery backup. Those would actually run your refrigerator for quite a while if you didn't open it if you didn't open the refrigerator a lot. So that's always a viable alternative as well. Welcome guest 2144. Go ahead, Eric.
So when a hurricane is 6 to 18 hours from arriving, turn on your radio or TV or radio, or check with your city county website every 30 minutes in order to get the latest weather updates and emergency instructions. Charge your cell phones now so you will have a full battery in case you lose power. So when a hurricane is 18 to 36 hours away from arriving, bookmark your city or county website for quick access to storm updates and emergency instructions. Bring loose, lightweight objects inside the house that could become projectiles in the high winds. Example, patio furniture and garbage cans. Anchor objects that could be unsafe to bring inside. Example, a propane tank or gas cans. And trim or remove trees close enough to fall on the building. Cover all of your home's windows and permanent store shutter or storm shutters offer the best protection for windows. A second option is to board up windows with 5x8 exterior grade or marine plywood, cut to fit and ready to install. What to do when a hurricane is 36 hours away from arriving is turn off TV or radio in order to get the latest weather updates and emergency instructions. Build or restock your emergency preparedness kit, including a flashlight, batteries, cash, and first aid supplies. And how to communicate with family members if you lose power. For example, you can call, text, email, or use social media. Remember that during disasters, sending text messages is usually reliable and faster than making phone calls because phone lines are often overloaded. Review your evacuation plan with your family. You may have to leave quickly, so plan ahead. Keep your car in good working condition and keep the gas tank full. Stock your car with emergency supplies and a change of clothes. And after the hurricane, listen.
Like what we have spare gas cans in our shed. If you haven't filled your gas tank, on your vehicle prior to the hurricane arriving, you can always take that gasoline out there and fill it. And that goes with other things too, not just hurricanes. Anytime you're in a scenario where you may need to leave quickly, it's always handy to have a little bit of extra gas sitting around just in case. You know, it's just like it always is, Murphy's Law always never fails. When you're least ready is when, you know, the proof hits the fan. So, you know, it'll never fail. You can have everything all ready to go, and something bad happens, and you've got a quarter tank of gas. So.
So after a hurricane, you're going to want to listen to local officials for updates and instructions. Check in with family and friends by texting or using social media. Return home only when authorities indicate that it is safe. Watch out for debris and downed power lines. And avoid walking or driving through flooded waters. Just 6 inches of moving water can knock you down, and fast-moving water can sweep your vehicle away. Avoid flood water as it may be electrically charged from underground or downed power lines and may hide dangerous debris or places where the ground is washed away. And photograph the damage to your property in order to assist in filing an insurance claim. Do what you can to prevent further damage to your property. Example, putting a tarp on a damaged roof, as insurance may not cover additional damage that occurs after the storm. And when there is no hurricane, make a hurricane plan. Know your hurricane risk. Talk to local emergency management, your local emergency management agency. Make an emergency plan. Build and restock your basic disaster supplies, including food and water, a flashlight, batteries, chargers, cash, and first aid supplies. Consider buying flood insurance. Familiarize yourself with local emergency plans and know where to go and how to get there should you need to get to higher ground or to evacuate. Stay tuned to local wireless emergency alerts, TV, or radio for weather updates, emergency instructions, or evacuation orders. And that is for hurricanes.
Very good. So a lot of good information there. And again, all this information can be found at, a good portion of this can be found at ready.gov, which is actually a very good website. We all know most things the government runs are ridiculous, but this ready.gov is actually a very good website. But a lot of concerning a lot of different topics. Go ahead, bud.
Okay, so on to tornadoes. Before a tornado, you want to prepare or to begin preparing. You should buy an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. listen to NOAA Weathers Radio, or to commercial radio or television newscasts for the latest information. In any emergency, always listen to the instructions given by local emergency management officials. Be alert to changing weather conditions. Look for approaching storms. Look for the following danger signs: dark, often greenish sky, large hail, a large, dark, low-lying cloud, particularly if rotating, loud roar similar to a freight train, and if you see approaching storms or any of the danger signs, be prepared to take shelter immediately. So, during a tornado, if you're in a structure, example, residence, small building, school, nursing home, hospital, factory, shopping center, or a high-rise building, go to a predestinated area such as a safe room, basement, storm cellar, or the lowest building level. If there is no basement, go to the center of the small interior room on the lowest level. Example, closet or interior wall or hallway. Away from corners, windows, and doors, and outside walls. Put as many walls as possible between you and the outside. Get under a sturdy table and use your arms to protect your head and neck. In a high-rise building, go to a small interior room or a hallway on the lowest floor possible. Put on sturdy shoes and do not open windows. In a manufactured home or office, get out immediately and go to pre-identified locations such as the lowest floor of a sturdy nearby building or a storm shelter. Mobile homes, even if tied down, offer little protection from tornadoes. And if you're outside with no shelter, immediately get into a vehicle, buckle your seatbelt, and try to drive to the closest sturdy shelter. If your vehicle is hit by flying debris while you're driving, pull over and park. Take cover in a stationary vehicle, put the seatbelt on, and cover your head and arms, or cover your head with your arms and a blanket, coat, or other cushion if possible. Lie in an area noticeably lower from the level of the roadway and cover your head with your arms and a blanket, coat, or other cushion if possible. In all situations, do not get under an overpass or bridge. You are safer in a low, flat location. Never try to outrun a tornado in urban or congested areas in a car or truck. Instead, leave the vehicle immediately for safer shelter. Watch out for flying debris, as flying debris from tornadoes cause most fatalities and injuries. And when the tornado is over, plan on building a safe room. Extreme windstorms in many parts of the country pose a serious threat to buildings and their occupants. Your residence may be built to code, but that does not mean it can withstand winds from extreme events such as tornadoes and major hurricanes. The purpose of a safe room or wind shelter is to provide a space where you and your family can seek refuge that provides a high level of protection. You can build a safe room in one of several places in your home: your basement, on top of a concrete slab on grade foundation or garage floor, an interior room on the first floor, and safe rooms built below ground level provide the greatest protection, but a safe room built in a first floor interior room also can provide the necessary protection. Below ground safe rooms must be designed to avoid... Yeah?
Also, on the discussion of safe room, you can actually build a root cellar, and then, or they call them tornado shelters in the Midwest, but you can utilize your tornado shelter as a root cellar. So you can use that for storage of your canned goods and miscellaneous supplies that, you know, for your prepping needs. So you know, it allows you to multitask with it. So it's just not just a single purpose room or structure. So I'm going to welcome Tim Rantz to the chat room. So go ahead, bud.
To protect its occupants, a safe room must be built to withstand high winds and flying debris, even if the rest of the residence is severely damaged or destroyed. Consider the following when building a safe room. The safe room must be adequately anchored to resist overturning and uplift. The walls, ceilings, and door of the shelter must withstand wind pressure and resist penetration by wood or wind-borne objects and falling debris. The connections between all parts of the safe room must be strong enough to resist the wind. Sections of either interior or exterior residence walls that are used as walls of the safe room must be separated from the structure of the residence so that damage to the residence will not cause damage to the safe room. And that is about it.
All right, well, that's a lot of, like I said, that's a lot of good information there. And, you know, we didn't prep for much of a hurricane because, well, not a lot of hurricanes come through New Mexico. But if you're in an area with hurricanes or you're in an area that gets tornadoes or earthquakes, if you prep for those, like I said earlier, it's a good thing to prep because it allows you the ability to increase the likelihood of your survival in a worse scenario, such as a grid down or an EMP, where you have an extended power outage or an extended event happening. Economic collapse is the same way. So, you know, on that note, and as far as EMPs go, there's several causes for EMPs. We'll go with the easiest one first, which is man-made nuclear events. They can also be caused by solar flares and lightning storms. Lightning storms can also cause electromagnetic pulses. So there's a lot of different varieties of electromagnetic pulses. They're all different. They all hit your electronics differently. excuse me, sorry. The nuclear ones hit the hardest. They will take out a good portion of electronics. There's several maps that I have posted in the images that are scrolling across that will kind of give you an idea of the actual areas where the damage would be. And if you look at America, it pretty much covers most of America. The farther out from the epicenter, the less likely it is to damage all of your equipment. We utilize a Faraday cage of sorts, being a stainless steel trash can with metal tape around the top of it to protect our stuff. Nuclear EMPs put out the most damage. Coronal mass ejections are more long-term. They'll actually last 18 to 24 hours and sometimes as long as 72 hours. So, as far as those go, they are an extended event. So if your power goes down, don't whip out all of your backup gear right from the get-go because chances are it's gonna last a day or two. There will usually be some kind of notice from NASA and several of the various solar observation sites notifying people of an incoming or upcoming coronal mass ejection. So an example of a very large coronal mass ejection, if you go on the internet and look up the Carrington event, that was a very powerful solar storm that happened in 1859, September 1st and 2nd, 1859. It hit hard enough that it actually caused the telegraph machines to burst into flames. Just out of the blue, just burst into flames. They say that if that kind of an event were to happen now, the damage would be catastrophic. So, you know, it's you know, a perfect example is I have an article here from September 3rd, 1859 from the Baltimore American and Commercial Advertiser. It says, they reported that those who happened to be out late on Thursday night had an opportunity of witnessing another magnificent display of the aurora lights. The phenomenon was very similar to the display on Sunday night, though at times the light was, if possible, more brilliant and the prismatic hues were varied and gorgeous. The light appeared to cover the whole firmament, apparently like a luminous cloud, through which the stars of the larger magnitude indistinctly shone. The light was greater than that of the moon at its full, but an indescribable softness and delicacy that seemed to envelop everything upon which it rested. Between 12 and 1 o'clock, when the display was at its full brilliancy, the quiet streets of the city resting under the strange light presented a beautiful as well as singular appearance. So if you know where Baltimore, Maryland is, you know that to see the rural lights there is unheard of. It never happens. I think when we lived out in Maryland, the closest that it came was Pennsylvania. So, you know, it's that tells you the magnitude of the solar storm and you know, how damaging that would be to America and the world today. Because that wouldn't just strike America, that would strike the whole world. You know, the U.S. government created a commission to study EMPs and what it could do to the safety and security of the United States. Unfortunately, the committee published the report the same day as the 9/11 commission. So, as you can expect, most news agencies still have very little coverage of the report that was released by the EMP commission. If you want to read the actual report, they actually have it posted online. You can go to www.empcommission.org and view that actual report. Basically, it's the bottom line of the report isn't really an if. It's a when we will be hit, because it's a given. 100% the chances of another large coronal mass ejection like that happening again is 100%. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's going to happen one day. So, you know, an EMP will take out pretty much everything electronic, whether it's connected to the grid or sitting unplugged on the kitchen counter. And there's a lot of debate about that from websites that say, well, if it's not plugged into the grid, it won't take it out. But there's a flaw in that, and that if you actually do some reading on the voltage that's created by an EMP, an EMP actually creates 100,000 volts of electricity. It's actual range from anywhere from 5,000 volts to 50,000 volts per meter of wire. So if you do the math on that, 100 extra volts going into a deep freeze or refrigerator, whether they're plugged in or not, you put a couple hundred extra volts into there, and they're not going to work real good afterwards. Doesn't matter whether they were plugged into the grid or not. You know, you've still got 3-4 feet of cable there. So, you know, 3 feet is a meter. So 5,000 volts going into any of your electronic devices. And a lot of that, like I said, depends based on your location in the United States. Some areas will be more sheltered than others. some areas where you're on the western or eastern slopes, depending on which direction you are from the epicenter, will be protected from some of the damage. So, you know, basically, here's an example of that. When you walk across a carpet and scuff your feet and then touch the doorknob, there's actually 1,000 volts going through your finger there. It's super, super, super low amperage. So that's what keeps it from actually doing a lot of damage. But that's how easy it is to create electricity. So, you know, one of the committee members in the EMP Commission likened EMP to a time machine, transporting our society from today back to 1870 in about 1 second. So, you know, if you look at life in the 1870s, I actually have several books from the 1870s that give an idea, a glimpse into the life back then. It's a lot different than it is nowadays. So, you know, excuse me, we become once again an agrarian society capable of supporting the level of population that we had in 1870. This means there will be a lot of Americans dying. So as far as it goes, if you look at that, they've done studies where if the grid's down for an extended period of time, the amount of fatalities and deaths in America have been placed as high as 9 out of 10 people. So that would put America back at 36 million people living in America. If you think about that, that's less than the amount of people that live in Baltimore or Chicago or Dallas, San Francisco, Los Angeles, any one of those towns. Far outside the amount of people who would be left living in the United States. And as the people who get left, prepping is a huge part of that. If you don't prep, you probably won't make it past that point. You know, and it's not even just an EMP or a solar flare, a coronal mass ejection, that can cause the grid to go down. You know, there has been previous attacks on our grid already. And one article that I read said that there's daily attempts to access the internet or the servers at just about every power plant in America. Now, granted, they don't get through, but that doesn't mean they're not trying. So every single day, the power plants are under attack. And the possibility of a terrorist attack knocking out the power grid makes for a good headline, but could it really happen? The United States Federal Energy Regulation Committee says yes. They said in a report that a terrorist attack on 9 substations could plunge the U.S. into a nationwide blackout for a minimum of 18 months and up to as long as 20 years. So if you look at that, I mean, that's a long time to be without power. The amount of damage and carnage that would cause, not just with lack of food and supplies, you have no medicines, you have no help. I mean, for the first 6 or 8 months, everyone's going to be trying to pick their own selves up. If you're not prepared and you haven't prepped, the likelihood of making it through that is not very good. If terrorists were ever able to knock out the 9 key transformers out of the 55,000 substations that we have in the United States, the U.S. grid would suffer a coast-to-coast blackout lasting at least 18 months or more. And that's according to leaked excerpts from the FERC report. And there's some websites you can go out to that have leaked information from the FERC report, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So there are 30 substations in the U.S. that play a critical role in the nation's grid operations, the report said. If any 9 of them were taken offline, there'd be widespread blackouts for weeks or far longer. So if you read a lot of the news that's out there, they're like, you just take down these 9 right here, these 9 substations. Now, we don't know where they're at. But seeing as everybody's servers have been hacked all over the country already, I'm pretty sure that people who don't want to know where they are. But it's actually even worse than that, in that it's not just 9. There's actually 30 key substations. And of those 30, they only have to knock out 9 in order to completely and totally decimate America. Perhaps most disturbingly, the California substation attack, which happened a couple of years ago, snipers destroyed 17 transformers, demonstrates that it does not require sophistication to do significant damage to the U.S. grid. They didn't even use bombs. They just went in there and they pinpoint shot the transformers, and they took them out individually, one at a time. The site where it happened was relatively remote, and according to video that they have reviewed since then from cameras, they left 60 seconds before the police arrived. They didn't find a single shell casing. There was nothing left behind. It was definitely a professional job. And as most of you, I'm sure, who listen to this have heard, you know, the Navy SEALs were brought in and Special Forces were brought in to review that case, and they all said the same thing. It was done exactly how they would have done it. So that just goes to show you that, you know, it's not hard for the grid to go down. That being said, you know, solar panels, food, a means of sanitation are all requirements to survive after an event like that. You know, and those are all things we have incorporated into our design for our new piece of property up in the mountains, which we'll go over that in some of the upcoming episodes. So make sure you come back for that. Anyway, back to what I was saying, and it's not just physical attacks. Despite the recent focus on physical security, some say cyber attacks present an even greater threat to the grid. A sophisticated targeted cyber attack could knock out large portions of the U.S. power grid for up to 18 months. Such an attack would be irrecoverable. More than a decade after 9/11, experts believe the U.S. has failed to adequately safeguard civil critical infrastructure, including grid operations, from cyber attacks. We've been led to believe by the government that these systems are secure and other countries don't have the capabilities to effectively attack the U.S. electric grid. Both of these assumptions are wrong. The power grid is inherently vulnerable because it is spread across hundreds of miles and many key facilities are unguarded. The report prepared for Homeland Security found, electric systems are not designed to withstand or quickly recover from damage inflicted simultaneously on multiple components. Such an attack could be carried out by knowledgeable attackers with little risk of detection or interdiction. Further well-planned and coordinated attacks by terrorists could leave the electric power system in a large region of the country at least partially disabled for a long time. There are probably less than 100 critical high-voltage substations on our grid in this country that can be protected from physical attack, former FERC Chairman John Wellinghoff told the Wall Street Journal. It is neither a monumental task nor is it an inordinate sum of money that would be required to do so. The problem is that nobody in the government really wants to do it. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine as to why they don't want to do it. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I'm sure somebody somewhere has a reason. And I'm pretty sure it's somebody's bottom line somewhere that's going to be affected that's the reason why. When the federal government established the North American Army Command in 2002, its purpose wasn't to repel foreign invaders. It was for domestic operations. So, if you look at that, in the event of an EMP or coronal mass ejection or a terrorist attack that would take the grid down for an extended period of time, the military is already preparing for such an event. And we know the military, they're not the quickest ones to jump on the bandwagon when it comes to large expenditures, especially when they're right in the middle of multiple conflicts all around the world. So, you know, that leads into my next section, which is civil unrest, which, given the country today, is quite the topic to talk about because there's so many different aspects that can lead into civil unrest that it's just, you know, unfathomable. And civil unrest can cause as much, if not more, localized carnage than the initial stages of an EMP or coronal mass ejection or a terrorist attack, because those would take several days before they were to actually affect everybody in the country, several days to several weeks before they affected everybody in a horrible way. Whereas civil unrest affects the areas where it's happening immediately. So, you know, the North American Army Command that was formed in 2002 was long and rightly forbidden by the Posse Comitatus Act. In February of 2009, when military commanders in Canada and the U.S. signed a pact allowing their armies to operate inside each other's countries, they didn't even bother to get authorization from Congress, which is illegal and unprecedented. You know, once again, the purpose was handling domestic civil emergencies. So they do all this to protect us and to help us, whether we know it or not. Whether we need it or not, they're doing it for us. For several years, the Centers for Disease Control tried to get states to adopt something called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, MEHPA. This act would allow state governments to become police state dictatorships in event of any ill-defined health emergency, which the Center for Disease Control has actually recently, within the last couple of months, tried to get authorization to force inoculate, force vaccinate individuals in the country in the event of a national emergency. So if you are driving down the street and you can't prove that you've had your vaccination, or you don't want to get a vaccination because chances are it's not a good vaccination, most vaccinations, my opinion only, of course, are not the best thing for you. There's a lot of side effects that they don't discuss or do a lot of research in. you know, they can actually force you to get inoculated, vaccinated against whatever the issue is. You know, that would allow state governments to become police state dictatorships. So, you know, that would allow them the ability to vaccinate people by force, destroy or seize their property without compensation, ration medical supplies, food and fuel. So if you're on medication, good luck getting it if they start rationing it. You'll get exactly what you need for the next 7 days and then come back and see them again. To their credit, most state governments rejected the act. A few adopted portions of it before a fervent opposition campaign caused the CDC to back off. However, the concept of a health dictatorship hasn't gone away, not hardly. Within days of the news that a new strain of swine flu had arisen in Mexico in April 2009, states were again considering legislation to give themselves martial law powers in the event of an epidemic. And what of the dozens and dozens of federal agencies that now have SWAT teams? And I mean, what exactly does the Bureau of Land Management need a SWAT team for? Or the Department of Housing and Urban Development? Why do they have a paramilitary unit? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, basically our government is turning itself into another branch of the military. So a couple of things you can do to prepare for civil unrest. You can ensure that your basic gear, your preps, and all your backup stuff is all in order and squared away. Inventory it. You know, it doesn't take long to inventory what you have. It also ensures that you're rotating your food as you go through it. You're rotating your supplies and make sure your batteries are still good. Make sure that, you know, all of your water and sanitation and stuff is still good. It doesn't do you any good if you go to turn your flashlight on and the batteries are completely dead. 2 weeks is the minimum that I would say to prep for. If you can prep for 3 or 4 months, that's, you know, all the better. You know, and it doesn't mean you have to go out and do it right now. That is the worst thing you can do. Most important thing to remember is don't panic. Stay calm. When you start prepping, which I did this myself when I started prepping, I was like, good Lord, you know, when I started reading all these websites and seeing all these articles, I was like, man, like the end of the world's coming yesterday. So I immediately went out and started spending mass quantities of money on stupid stuff, that most of which didn't work and was just gimmicks. And then when I actually needed it, a lot of it, again, didn't work. So, you know, the most important thing to remember is stay calm. It doesn't matter if the end of the world, as we notice tomorrow, if you go out and buy a little bit each time you get a paycheck, you know, you're gonna be a whole lot better off than if you run out and spend all of your money because that leads to other financial issues. So anyway, learning homesteading and self-sufficiency skills, gardening, whatever, are skills that are irreplaceable. The location where you live isn't really as much of a concern as most people say. You know, if you live in a condo or an apartment, you know, there's nothing says you can't have pots growing. Pots, like planters, not pots, growing on your windowsill, unless you're in Colorado, and then you can probably have the pot growing on your windowsill too. But you know, if as far as that goes, the hardest part of growing something is learning how to do it, because 60, 70 years ago, America moved away from the backyard gardening and the backyard farming and moved into the more on-demand lifestyle. So, you know, learning how to do that again is not as simple as throwing some seeds in the ground and waiting 60 days and then chowing down on a whole lot of food, because you're probably going to starve if you try that. So, you know, if you live in an apartment or a condo, a house in the city, whatever, start prepping. Start learning these self-sufficient skills. Start learning how to homestead. Go pick up a couple of books from the early 1900s and read about gardening. There are some really awesome books that you can find from the early 1900s on gardening and farming and backyard homesteading, etc. Keep a list of your first aid supplies and medical supplies. If you can, get an extra supply of your prescription medications. Again, like we discussed the other night on CRN, January 1st is a new law going into effect that will effectively ban the sale of a good portion, not all, but a good portion of animal antibiotics. And, you know, once they start that process, it's not far behind for the follow-up of the rest of them. Once they've got the door open and they've already banned the horse and the mammal medications, it won't be long before the fish antibiotics are gone too. So if you have a little bit extra cash, tax checks coming up, you're going to get a little bit of cash back, stock up on them while you can, because before long you won't be able to get them. Medical supplies, prescription drugs will guaranteed be in short supply in the event of civil unrest on a nationwide level. So set up a personal, you know, your personal protection, self-defense. You know, if you own a firearm, apply for a concealed weapons permit, stock up on ammo, practice shooting. It's going to lead into Firearms Safety 101. A friend of my daughter's, we'll just refer to him as a friend of my daughter's, decided that it was a wise idea to examine a hammer and a bullet and see what happens after a mad rush to the emergency room, to have the tendon in his hand reconnected. You know, he learned real quick what you don't do with a hammer and a bullet. So, you know, there's firearm safety is no joke. You can joke about it and laugh and carry on, but ultimately when it comes down to it, it hit him in his left hand. He hit the bullet. It was in a nail hole on a dresser, so when he hit it, the bullet didn't have any place to go, so it caused shrapnel from the casing. His hand was in front of him. If his hand hadn't been there, it would have embedded that shrapnel right into his belly, and it probably would have tore all kinds of intestines apart, and that would have been a whole lot longer time in the hospital. So, you know, firearm safety is no joke. As far as that goes, you need to treat everything with respect, because guns are just that. They're made to kill. You know, whether it's for hunting, whether it's for personal defense, whatever. They're not designed to maim. They're not designed to injure. They're designed to kill, and that's what they're there for, and that's what they're supposed to do. So, you know, when it comes to that, on that note, like I said, stock up on ammo, keep the hammers away from the bullets, John. And, you know, and then practice taking, you know, take your guns to the range and actually practice shooting. Well, I actually know people who have firearms who have never shot them. They have quite the collection, but they've never shot them. So, you know, it does no good to have a gun that you have no clue whether it works. Some other forms of self-defense, pepper spray. Pepper spray can come in handy. Bear spray. Bear spray is relatively good self-defense. I mean, it's a big, bulky container, but you can spray down people from 30 feet away, and that's important because you don't want them getting close to you. Slingshot is a handy tool to keep in the trunk of your car. Slingshot and some ball bearings, and you can do a whole lot of damage. And, you know, there's no sound when it comes to that. Bows and crossbows are the same way. If you're going to get one, I would recommend a bow over a crossbow. Personal preference here. And that is because in most states, I think all states, I'm not positive, I know most states, hunting with a crossbow is illegal, whereas hunting with a bow is not. So if you have a bow, you have dual purpose. You can use it for more than one thing, you know. Excuse me. there are a lot of different, you know, things that you can keep on hand. A knife, a pocket knife, is a very handy thing to have. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with a pocket knife that you won't think about until you're actually in the scenario where you need it. Find people, reach out to people in your community. Form prepper groups. Form militias. Not that I hate the idea of militias, I just hate the image that the left-wing media has promoted when it comes to militias. Militias are an awesome, benefit of America. But I feel every time someone says, "Oh, go form a militia," the first thing pops in your head is a bunch of whacked out people out trudging around the woods with camo and assault rifles waiting to shoot somebody or themselves in the foot. So, find a community group that's already formed and join them, it's a lot easier when there's more than one person. One person cannot do it himself. A family can probably do it, but you're really pushing it. If you get a few extended family members, it makes it that much easier. So, the idea of the lone survivor is just that. It's more of a myth than a reality, in my opinion, in that you have to sleep sooner or later. And when you're sleeping, you're not watching your perimeter. So with that being said, back on the things you can do to prep, keep cash on hand. Not a lot. I'm not saying, put 10 grand in your closet in your bedroom unless, you're really, really rich, in which case let me know. I take donations. keep a small amount of cash on hand, because if the grid goes down and you need something, stores may still take cash. They can't take credit card because there's nothing working. But you better believe that if you walk in there and offer $100 for some food, you're going to walk out of there with some food. I don't know too many managers that wouldn't take that, and especially in some of these smaller privately owned stores. ATMs and banks will close. They won't work. Accumulate some stuff that you can use for bartering. Bleach, hydrogen peroxide, rubbing alcohol, bullets, things like that. Things that you can use. Beer, wine, fifth of liquor. Candles, batteries, food, sanitation supplies. You'd be really surprised, if you think about this, how much a roll of toilet paper would go for 3 months after an economic collapse, or 3 months after a grid down scenario, when toilet paper is all gone. So that being said, make sure you have somebody with a gun with you while you're bartering, to make sure that they don't have people come up behind you and take the stuff anyway. So yeah, it's just like Tim's rant says, cash is king, and that's just it. Cash is in the short term, in an event like that, would still be, money talks. So, sanitation supplies, cleaning products, first aid items, extra things like that. Seeds are awesome for barter, in that you can grow your own food out of half of them if you buy enough, and then barter the rest off. Because not everybody is going to prepare. Not everybody is going to prep with their seed supplies. So, you're going to have people who may be capable of growing things, but they didn't save any seeds. So, you'd be surprised what people will barter with and for. Don't forget about your kids and your grandparents, and for some of you, your parents. And your pets. Pets most importantly. Pets can't feed themselves and care for themselves as easily as humans can. Now, mind you, a pack of dogs running around the wild does a pretty good job of fending for themselves, but at that point they're no longer pets. They're wild animals. And the same thing with cats. So, you know, in a riot or a civil unrest, you know, situation, make sure that you don't leave your animals outside, because people will do stupid things when they see animals. And in the event of a grid down scenario or a economic collapse, the same thing. Look at Venezuela. They raided the zoo and ate all the animals in the zoo because they'd already eaten all the stray animals in the city. And just as an example, Caracas doesn't have any pigeons left in the town. I'll just let you figure out exactly where the pigeons all went to, but they didn't fly off. So, you know, as far as that goes, take care of your animals. They will provide you with a whole lot of benefits down the road in an economic collapse and a grid down scenario. If you have chickens, there's nothing better than an outside dog to take care of coyotes and things like that. If you have cats, they'll keep your rodent population down in your garden. So, you know, but don't leave them outside in an economic collapse scenario unless you know where you're at and you know that they're not going to get on somebody's dinner plate. You know, that leads on to communications. Communications equipment, the ham radios, CB radios. I don't have any of this stuff yet. Not that I don't want it. I just haven't gotten to it at that point. There's some other things I have in the works that, in my opinion, a little bit more precedence. However, you know, in a grid down scenario or a economic collapse scenario where you have power still, there will be other people with power. And ham radios, they broadcast all over the world. So, you know, those plan. You know, something that you can, you know, work over with everybody in your family so everybody knows what to do in the event of a, you know, or whatever scenario. Eric, you still with us there? You're awful quiet on the other end there.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, so here's a quick question. If the grid were to go down tomorrow while I'm at work, what do you do?
Get everything ready in the living room and stay there and wait for you.
Very good. And what happens if I'm not there in 4 days?
We go to the property and you know where to go.
There you go. And that is exactly it. And the reason I put a limit on 4 days is because after 7 days, you don't want to be out on the road. And 4 days is really, really pushing it. That's the outside end of, you know, when you want to be moving on the roads. You know, 7 days, you don't want to be anywhere near a town if you don't have to, because it'd be a horrible situation. You know, and make sure that everybody in your family that you want to know knows exactly what to do. It does no good if you know what to do, but nobody else knows what to do. Or you know, I'm at the house and my wife is at the store and the kids are at the mall and all the power goes out. Well, if nobody knows what to do except for you, it does you no good. You're going to be sitting at the house with all your prepping gear waiting for everybody to get there, and they may not get there. So, you know, keep your emergency plan relatively simple. And, you know, what I tell my wife is, if I'm not here in 4 days, you know what to do. So there you go. We've drawn out maps. We have alternate plans. You know, I've taught my son how to use a compass. My wife knows how to use a compass. Eventually, I'm actually going to have a GPS and solar chargers so that you can charge said GPS. It does you no good if you have a GPS and no way to charge it. You know, so those are all things to keep in mind in the event that you have to actually walk somewhere. Because if none of the vehicles are working and you're in a town someplace and your bug out location is not in that town, you got to get there. So. Like me, we're a ways away from our bug out property. It would take us probably 2 weeks to get there, but we've already made preparations to get there and, you know, and taken that into account. So, you know, and something else to keep on hand? Excuse me. books, either hardcover books or printed off copies of books, books on survival, books on homesteading, books on... I have 70 gigabytes. Actually, I take it back. I have like 160 gigabytes of YouTube videos, books that I've gotten and scanned onto my computer, books that I've gotten that were out of print. There are, excuse me, a whole lot of resources available that you can actually go out and download. Go to 100 different prepper websites, and every single one of them is going to have information on there somewhere that you can print off and put into your supply. You know, seed saving. Seed saving is so important, I can't even stress the importance of it. There is not enough words for me to describe how important seed saving is. Because without the ability to save your seeds, you have nothing to plant after your first year and you will starve. Think about that. If a grid goes down because of an EMP or coronal mass ejection or a terrorist attack, the minimum is 18 months. Most experts say that it's anywhere from 8 to 10 years minimum before the majority of the country has power back. Now, there'll be areas that get power back before that, but are you going to be in one of those areas? Probably not, unless you're living in one of the bigger metropolises. And even then, it's kind of a hit and miss. I wouldn't want to live there anyway. I don't want to live in Chicago if the grid goes down. That's not a pretty sight, I'm sure. So, you know, stock up on reference books. Build yourself your own little library. You know, it's irreplaceable. So we've covered a whole bunch of information as far as what you can do. Excuse me. Most importantly, stay calm and don't tell everybody in the world exactly what you have and where you're going to be going and all that. You know, if you actually look at, if I were to show you exactly how many people know exactly where my property is, including my family members, it is four. Four people outside of my family know exactly where my property is. And even then, only two of those four people have actually been to my property. So the other two know about where it's at, but they've never been there. So, you know, does that mean I'm a horrible person? No, it just means that there's a lot of people that won't be coming to my property, and because of a lot of that's because of logistics. I can't get somebody from West Virginia or, you know, Vermont to New Mexico. It's just not feasible. There's no way for me to accomplish that feat, especially in a long-term grid down or economic collapse scenario. So you have to, excuse me, you have to prep for the things that you can't change, not prep for the things you can change, not for the things you can't. It does you no good to prep for a asteroid, you know, a life-ending, you know, civilization-ending asteroid hitting Earth, because you can't. There's nothing you can do. You can't prep for that. So don't stress about it. Don't worry about it. Prep for what you can change. Prep on how to survive. Prep on how to homestead. Prep on how to be self-sufficient. Prep on gardening, farming, back to basics. Learn how to go get a hunting license next year and go shoot a squirrel. Learn how to skin it. You know, it's things like that that will keep you alive in one of these events. You know, it's, and like I said, I can't stress it enough. Make sure that everybody in your family knows what to do in the event of an emergency, because, you know, everyone needs to know where to meet and what to do in that scenario. So, you know, if you keep your mouth shut and don't broadcast to the world exactly what your plans are, you know, what you're planning on doing, remember that the government has now passed laws making it, thanks to Barack Obama's executive orders, making it okay for them to come take all of your prepping supplies in the event of a national emergency. So, you know, if you broadcast to the world exactly what you have and where you have it, you better believe in the event of an economic or national emergency, they're going to come get your stuff, and you're not going to have anything. So then you're just as bad off as everybody else. So a little bit of operational security will go a long ways. So that leads into the next thing. One of the images scrolling across the screen has the ACLU website for the bus card. That is a very good card. It tells you what to do in the event that you are stopped by the police. It also tells you what not to do. It's a very informative little card. And it tells you first, ask to call your lawyer. Be courteous. Do not resist. Do not consent to search or entry. Do not talk about anything. Do not admit or deny anything. Ask them if you're free to go. If you are, then go. If they tell you no, you're not free to go, then you need to ask to have an attorney. Ask to speak to an attorney. And they tell you no, then you need to be courteous. Don't resist arrest because it will just make things worse. Perfect example of exactly how far our country has gone in the wrong direction. Army Field Manual, FM 3-19.15. In these modern times, demonstrations, civil unrest, public disorder, and riots happen for a number of reasons. Some of these reasons are economic hardship, social injustices, ethnic differences leading to oppression, objections to world organizations or certain governments, political grievances, and terrorist acts. An event can be triggered by a single cause or a combination of causes. The military, the Army, has made preparations for dealing with civil unrest in America. Call it conspiracy theory, call it whatever you want. Do a little research and you'll find out that's actually a factual statement. They indeed have set up locations where you can be detained. Locations complete with guard towers, buildings with bunkhouses in them. If you don't believe me, go do some research on the internet. There's one in El Paso. I showed it to a buddy of mine who was a retired master sergeant. And he was like, no, that's for training. And then he went to go out there and look at it. And there's Department of Homeland Security helicopters out there. And, yeah, so he was like, wow, yeah, that's interesting. So there is stuff out there that they don't tell you about. And they don't tell you about it for a reason, because if you knew about it, well, then you might get upset. So they just lead us all along like sheep to a slaughter. You know, if you want a perfect example of what hyperinflation looks like, look up the Weimar Republic. That is a perfect example of what hyperinflation. Look up Venezuela. Look up Argentina 2000-2002. You know, there's a guy, Fernando Aguirre. He's the author of The Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse, and Bugging Out and Relocating When Staying Is Not an Option. Mr. Aguirre is a wealth of information. I've listened to him on several different podcasts, and he has an insane quantity of knowledge. One day I would like to talk to him in person, but he is just the knowledge that he has from having gone through the economic collapse in Argentina is, you know, his information is irreplaceable when it comes to prepping for an economic collapse. If you get a chance, go out. He has a website. Yeah, the link is in one of the images on the page that's scrolling past you. It's furfall.blogspot.com, furfal.blogspot.com. And he is just a wealth of information. The knowledge that he has is amazing. The things, and this is a perfect example, the things that people will barter to feed their families are ridiculous. When you become so desperate that you have nothing to feed your family and your family hasn't eaten for 3-4 days, you will sell your body for food, as they did it in Argentina. And it wasn't just the low-class people who were doing it. And that is horrible. There's no reason why people should be forced to do that except that they did not prepare. And that's a sad situation. So, you know, you know, what exactly is hyperinflation? In economics, hyperinflation occurs when a country experiences very high and usually accelerated rates of inflation. Look at Venezuela. Last year, 245% inflation. This year, they're expected to hit 720% inflation. So if you do the math on that, if a gallon of milk cost you $1 at the beginning of last year, that's cheap for a gallon of milk. $1. At the end of last year, it was $2.45, right? Nope. Nope, it'd be 1 times 2, or 100% times 2. So you're looking at, like, even if it's $2.45, then you go to 720% increase after that. And that's $14 for that $1 gallon of milk. So if you take milk in your area, like here, it's $3 a gallon. At the end of that first year, you're looking at $7 a gallon. And then at the end of that second year, you're looking at $21 a gallon for milk. I don't know how many people out there who can afford that, but if you can, you're doing way better than me. So, you know, what that does is, you know, the rapidly accelerating inflation, you know, rapidly erodes the real value of the local currency and causes the population to minimize their holdings of local money. The population normally switches to holding relatively stable foreign currencies, such as if you look at Venezuela, they're holding U.S. dollars. All around the world, they're holding U.S. dollars as a form of stable currency, which is sad in and of itself, in that if you look back when Barack Obama took office, not blaming him for everything, when you look back when Barack Obama took office, there was $7 trillion in United States actual printed bills, $7 trillion, floating around the world, all right? By the time he ends his second term in office, there will be $13 trillion in U.S. dollars floating around the world of printed currency. So you do the math on that. Have you seen everything go up double? Did your house payment go up double? Did your rent go up double? Did your electric bill go up double? I don't think so. But if you do the math on that, at some point that's going to have to catch up to us. And if you look at our economy, as far as that goes, the economy is not doing anywhere near as good as they tell you it is. They're like, oh, it's doing great. The best economy, you know. Obama is handing off a strong economy to Trump. BS. It is not strong. There is nothing strong about it. Two-thirds of the people who are employed in part-time jobs, and most of them are holding two and three jobs just to pay their bills. That's Black Friday showed the lowest sales in like 5 years. So, you know, it's not. Our economy is not strong, and sooner or later that is going to catch up with America. Another article I was reading said that if Trump wants to fix the economy, unfortunately he's going to have to print massive quantities of cash and do massive quantities of QE to fix it, to keep the country floating long enough for him to fix it. What is that going to do to us as a country? You know, what is that going to do to you in a year if everything that you have costs three times what it does today? Just three times. Not even 720%. Just three times. Think about that. You go out for lunch at McDonald's, $6. Nope, $18. What happens when people can't afford to go to McDonald's? Well, then all those people who are employed by it compounds. It's like a snowball rolling down a hill. You know, if you can't afford to go to McDonald's, McDonald's starts closing stores. More people get unemployed. More people get unemployed, the country does worse. So, you know, under such conditions, the general price level within an economy increases rapidly as the official currency quickly loses value. The value of economic items remains relatively stable in terms of foreign currencies. Hyperinflations are usually caused by large, persistent government deficits, government deficits, financed primarily by money creation rather than taxation or borrowing, just like what I talked about. As such, hyperinflation is often associated with wars, their aftermath, socio-political upheavals, or the crises that make it difficult for the government to tax the population. If you look at our country right now, 95 million working-age individuals are not working. 95 million working-age individuals are not working currently. So, who's paying all the taxes? Something to think about. Hyperinflations are usually caused by large persistent government deficits. I already read that, sorry. a sharp decrease in real tax revenue coupled with a strong need to maintain the status quo, together with an inability or unwillingness to borrow, can lead a country into hyperinflation. 720% inflation. That is where the IMF says it expects Venezuela's consumer inflation to rocket to this year, following an estimated 275% jump last year. You know, over the next 10 years, experts think the debt could balloon to a staggering $27.3 trillion in America. That's, you know, just unfathomable. I can't even fathom that many zeros. You know, I watched a debt clock the other day on TV, and every like 10 seconds, $100,000 rolled up on the frickin' tax on the debt bill. I'm like, you know, who is this money going to? Because it ain't going to me. You know, while that might seem like an insurmountable amount of debt to recover from, the fact is we have already surpassed that number. And this is just what political experts are saying is 27.3 trillion. But if you actually take into consideration, you know, factor in unbundled liabilities like Social Security, Medicare, government pension plans, Obamacare, you know, the true debt number is actually much higher than $27.3 trillion. Some estimates put the real number somewhere between $205 trillion to $222 trillion. So, you know, if you think about that, that is just a ridiculous amount of cash. I can't even fathom that much. You know, it's just insane as far as how much that is, you know. And that's your debt. That's your debt as a American. You know, so think about that. Because you owe that money, your kids owe that money. If you're younger and married, don't have any kids, when you have kids, they already owe that money. Even though they're not born yet, they already owe that money. So, you know, what can you expect during a major economic collapse? You know, there's going to be a run on the banks. Look at Greece. It's already happened there. Look at Venezuela, same thing. I mean, in some places in Venezuela, they're having to hit six ATMs to pull out $3,500 of Venezuelan money, not U.S. dollars, per ATM machine just to be able to cover their daily daily expenses, you know? The amount of inflation down there is just ridiculous. The Weimar Republic, they used to roll wheelbarrows full of cash around to buy a sack of potatoes and a loaf of bread for a wheelbarrow full of money. And the Venezuelan Bolivar is not far behind there. You know, at this point, people are making $200,000 a year, and when you actually compare that to what, you know, what it actually is, they're actually making, it's like $200, $300 a month is what they make, $300 a month. So, I mean, that's just insane as far as, you know, as far as a comparison. You know, so you're going to have a run on banks. The banks are going to shut down and go on bank holidays. And then you're not going to be able to get anything because the banks are shut down. The ATMs are going to run out of money because ATMs, well, they only have a certain amount of money on them. And you better believe if there's a bank holiday that they're not going to fill those ATM machines. And if anything, they may actually shut them down. You know, so at that point, you can't get to your money even if your bank is still open. Even if your bank hasn't done a bank holiday, you won't be able to get to the money in your bank. You know, so one of the first things you'll see is a run on the banks. People are going to be panicking. They will be doing everything they can to get their hands on cash to buy extra supplies. If you have a stockpile of cash, just like Jim Rantz said, cash is king. If you have a small stockpile of cash, it will get you through the first couple of days in a situation like that. And that may be the difference between life and death. You know, so you're going to see chaos in the streets, mass rioting, civil unrest, murder. You know, once the banks run dry, people are going to turn desperate. when they realize you have something and they don't, they will justify why they will take it from you. At some point, martial law will be imposed. You know, when martial law is imposed, you better believe that that is not where you want to be at. You'll see travel restrictions, mandatory curfews, suspension of constitutional rights. During the 2008 financial collapse, millions of Americans lost their homes, cars, and personal possessions because they were saddled with debt. They were overloaded with debt. You know, if you can get out of debt right now, do it. Get yourself free. Start cutting all of your non-essential expenses. Use that money to pay down your debt. You know, if you don't need that cable with 1,400 channels, cut it down to the basic. I'm going to do the same thing right after the football season ends. So, you know, use that money to pay down your debt. During an economic collapse, the likelihood of losing your home to debt collectors is a very real prospect because people will lose jobs. Think about that. You're working three jobs, part-time jobs right now to pay all your bills. What happens when the economy tanks and McDonald's closes, Burger King closes, Walmart starts laying people off because their sales are so bad because nobody has any money to buy anything? And if they do have money, it takes so much money to buy something that you can't afford it. You know, right now you can go to Venezuela, 3 ounces of silver will buy you 3 months worth of food, and an ounce of gold will buy you a house. So that's how bad their economy is. Keep cash on hand. I cannot stress that one enough. Keep cash on hand. Not a lot. I know times are tight for everybody. Times are tight for me. Keep a little bit of cash on hand. If you can tuck away $10 a week, $25 a week, tuck it away, because that will come in handy and be life-saving amount of money when you need it as a rainy day fund. Start a rainy day fund, you know? Just like prepping with food, you should prep with a rainy day fund. You should always have a rainy day fund of some sort. Use it to buy, when you get large quantities in there, use it to buy things like prepping stuff, solar panels, charge controller, inverter, water tanks, whatever. You know, whatever you need that you don't have. If you can afford to, there's a lot of places in this country that you can go buy an acre of land and pay $100 a month for 3 years, and it's paid off. You know, financed by the owners. Go find a piece of property, a small piece of property. A lot of those places are $300, $400 for down payments, $500 for down payments. They have them in Missouri, Tennessee. I've seen them in Arkansas. I've seen them in New Mexico. I've seen them in Texas. If you go into West Texas, this is a warning. If you go into West Texas, bear in mind, most parts of West Texas, a well will cost you $60,000. Most parts of West Texas do not get a lot of rainfall. So unless you have a lot of land that you can freaking do rainwater collection on, chances are you're going to have to come up with some other form of water. That leads into the water seer out there in California. I'm going to get one of those here, a couple of those here, and order them, pre-order them in about a week or so. They're $134 a piece. I'm sure I will have to drive out there to pick them up, but that's okay. I'll take a week off from work and drive out there to save on the ship. And besides, it gives me a nice vacation to California. But those will come in handy. Even if it's just enough water to keep yourself from dying and add a little bit of water to your water containment, drip irrigation is insanely efficient. You use about 10% of the water that you would normally use watering your garden if you use irrigation. And for some plants, you can actually use less than that, depending on the plant. So, the biggest thing I can say is, don't wait. Don't wait until the day after, because at that point, it indeed is too late. You have already waited too long. If you start prepping the day before an economic collapse, a grid down scenario, an EMP, a hurricane, a tornado, an earthquake, whatever the scenario, if you start prepping the day before, you are better off than if you started prepping the day after. Because at that point, it's already too late. You have waited too long. You know, now is the time to really take a look at yourself and your situation and decide, you know, hey, what can I do to better myself? What can I do to make sure that my family is taken care of in the event of an emergency? What can I do to help my family survive? I cannot stress that enough. Everything that you do in prepping should be geared towards your family. Even if you're single, you have family. You have brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces, whatever. You have family. You may not want to talk to some of them, but you have family nonetheless. So, you know, start stockpiling your food. Start stockpiling, you know, long-term supplies, first aid kits. You know, put yourself a bug out bag together. Get yourself a small supply of a small good supply of first aid supplies. I don't recommend buying a first aid kit. I probably will be buying one here before too long, but that's to go in my car. You know, when it comes to like actually buying first aid supplies, go to one of the dollar stores and buy them. You can get this stuff dirt cheap. Family Dollar, Dollar General, Dollar Tree, all of them. You can buy stuff dirt cheap there and slowly add to your supply. You know, start stocking up on your resources, your books. I cannot take that from place. That is probably one of the most important ones. Because if you don't know how to do it, you can learn how to do it by reading. You know? Start today, though. Don't wait. And on as far as that goes, you still there, Eric? Fall asleep on the other end there? Eric? I don't hear him. Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. If anyone else has any questions in the chat room? No. Oh, look, we have somebody on the... Hey, got a caller. Look at there. I didn't even see that. Hello, caller. Sorry about that. I should try to pay more attention to my device here, huh? Are you there, caller?
Yeah, you there, Brian?
Hey,
can you hear me?
Sorry about that. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Jason from Oregon.
Hello, Jason. Oh, I think I talked to you a couple of times before.
Yeah, I've been in the chat room, and I can't get the chat room to work tonight, so I thought I'd call in and say hi and help you out.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. I looked over there about 30 minutes ago. I didn't see anybody, so I've just been kind of ranting the last 30 minutes.
I think you just dumped... You hit everybody with a fire hose in 1 hour.
Yeah, it's. I can't stress it enough. It's so important. You know, start prepping today. You know, today is the day that you should start prepping.
Yeah, I had a comment about you trying to get across to your other property. If there's no electricity and nothing is driving, bicycles is a solution I've come up with.
That is correct.
And even
if
I have
actually,
to.
There are motors you can buy. There are motors you can buy for those bikes, two-stroke motors and four-stroke motors that don't, you know, the electronics on them are relatively simple. You can keep them in a Faraday cage and they'll get 60, 70 miles per gallon. That's another idea.
Yeah, and what I've done in the past is look for bicycle trailers. You can get the Berkey style ones, I think they're called Burley style. Get them used for about between $20 and $40. You can haul a lot of materials in that trailer, but they won't pull a bigger trailer usually, right?
Right. No, things like that. See, we actually have plans to get, for my wife and my two kids that live with me, 4 bicycles and 4 of those motors and 4 of those trailers. Because the trailers will actually work out where you keep... Each bicycle keeps 1 spare 5-gallon gas can on there, and that's enough gas to get any place you need to go as far as like bugging out would go. And then you can keep, it's a lot easier than walking. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. I looked into those motors, and there's a lot of them out there. One of the major brands seems to not be selling anymore, so there's third-party Chinese versions now out there, and I don't know if they're any good or not.
Yeah, I've seen some of the third-party Chinese ones. I've heard horrible reviews on them, too. There's one that I don't have my I don't have my tablet in front of me. There's one that that I was looking at the other day that I will look up real quick if you want to if you had anything you want to talk about.
Yeah, I just had general comments about you were talking about seed saving, having your seeds in your garden. We picked up on the, what I call the Ruth Stout method a few years back, the deep mulching, and using a straw. You have to be careful with the straw, I guess, now, and make sure it's from a source without that broadleaf killer. But that has worked so well for us, especially if you put some manure down underneath the first year, and then every year after that, you just build onto it. And, you know, we're wetter up here, so the straw mulches really well. And right now I've got a call out on Craigslist looking for free heirloom seeds if anybody's been saving them and has extra. Just trying to find a way to get the cost down on the gardening. Maybe Brian dropped off.
All right, I'm back. All right, I'm back. Hello?
Hello?
Anybody there?
Hey, can you hear me?
There, there.
I got dropped off.
Are you still there? Oh. All right. Well, apparently my computer is not instrumental.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More. Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More. And more.